Okay, so we're working through this first piece in Al Yishur Chelek Aleph. We went through a couple of the Hakdamos outside and spoke about the first half of this piece, Limud Gemara, where he developed the idea of Limud Gemara, Limud Torah Behechrich. That a person could think that I'm coming to yeshiva and I'm going to learn. It's enjoyable, it's fun, it's positive. I gain so much from it, it's so meaningful. Rav Volpe says there's room for that. We literally started 5 seconds ago. Rav Volpe says there's room for that to develop over time. But the way things need to start off is with a very different, almost the opposite perception, the opposite assumption. The assumption needs to be Torah hi v'lilmod ani tzarech, right? If not for Torah, zavadati ba'ani, right? I would collapse, I'd fall apart in my pain. That the Torah is the air that we breathe and the water that we drink. It's limud Torah mitoch hechrich, from a sense of I'm forced into this and I don't have a choice. That I can't go a day without learning, not because I'll feel bad about myself, not because it's the wrong thing to do, but because the same way I can't go a day without drinking and a day without sleeping, it's the same thing with Torah, I can't go a day without learning. The first idea that he developed in the Slimud Gemara Behechrich. And then, similar to what he had developed in the Hakdama, once you get into that, then you can start once you come in the mushal that he used earlier, as a basic soldier, as a foot soldier in the infantry, and you work your way up the ranks, then you can start specializing. Then you can start saying, I now connect, I know that I found connection to a certain area of Torah, and this is going to be my mitoch cheshach, etc., etc. Those are all positive things, but it's not how we start. We start with this basic foundation of Limud mitoch hechrich. As a group, we spoke about some of the positives, some of the benefits, pluses and minuses of learning mitoch hechrich, as opposed to learning because it's fun, it's exciting, it feels good, etc. It gives you the opportunity to develop skills in areas you wouldn't otherwise have prioritized. Even when you're having a tough day, a rough day, you're going to learn anyway, right? If it was just because Torah feels good, when if you're having a rough day, Torah is going to slip by the wayside because I'm just not feeling it today. When you're coming from the right attitude with the right perspective, so then all those things do get prioritized. I think we mentioned Rav Cook has an essay where he talks about exposing yourself to all different areas of Torah before you can really start feeling the geshmak and the real sweetness of Torah. That's something which comes if you come in with this attitude of, even if it's hard, even if it's difficult. Rav Cook himself is very difficult. But if you expose yourself to it, you struggle through, you break your teeth, that's when you can get to the point of really appreciating the depth of what those other areas of learning have to offer. So today we're going to continue with the rest of the piece. This is on Chav Dalam and Chav Hei, if you have the safer. He adds two more points. He talks about Chavrusa, he talks about Chazar. So the point about Chavrusa, probably my favorite Chavrusa story. I had a Chavrusa when I was in Shana Aleph, a guy named Aaron White. He was originally my Musa Shade Chavrusa, and the first question he asked me, the first question was, what's your name? Second question he asked me when we sat down for our first opportunity learning Musar together was, when are you finishing Shas? I'm a Chicago kid, Skokie Yeshiva. That was not on my radar when I first walked into Yeshiva Dakota. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like, when are you finishing Shas? What's your plan? What's your schedule? I don't have a plan. I don't have a schedule. Let me get through El of Shana Aleph first. He's like, no, everybody has to have, it doesn't need to be this year. It probably shouldn't be this year. It doesn't need to be in the next 3 years. At some point in your life, it should be a goal. It should be on your to-do list if this is something that I need to do. That was probably the best piece of Musar that we learned for the entire year. The actual Sefer that we ended up learning from Mr. Seder was an English book by Zev Lev, which, no insult to seminary girls, but it was very much a seminary girl book. It was in English with a picture of a signpost on the front, what's your direction and growth this way. And what we do is we would read a piece and talk about it. That lasted us through hell, and then we couldn't handle it anymore, and we switched to Mechtav Eliyahu. At a certain point in the year, we just switched to Gemara. So Aaron's story, get a lot of Musar from Gemara. Aaron's story was he was a year older than me. He was not a year older than me. He was born on February 29th. So technically he's 15 years younger than I am. But he was the year ahead of me in yeshiva. And his thing was that he had set a goal to finish Shas by his third year in yeshiva, which he actually ended up hitting. He made his CM on British camp. Were you there?
I wasn't there.
Whoa. But you heard about it. Okay, that's really cool. British camp is supposed to be a big deal, but they keep it thing, right? And he Dafka said that as like the, what?
3 years.
He finished, he made his CM, I think, the end of his third, yeah.
That's 2.5 months today.
Yeah, the half of 7, right? Might as well work. Normal cycle is 7.5, so it'd be a little more. Yeah, it was pretty significant. He put in a lot of time and effort. So I was his partner in this, for definitely from that second year. We worked together a lot to get to that goal. So that second year, we were learning together for most of afternoon Seder. Started pretty early and pretty late, so like it encompassed afternoon. It was a little more than that, if you need that, if you're going to be doing that many daf in the day. So we were in the middle of Menachos somewhere. I don't remember where. But there was a difficult study in the middle of Menachos. We were trying to keep up the pace, but we really just weren't understanding what was going on. The Tumma and Tara of a certain Mincha that's brought him back, what's going on here? We weren't talking. So I was saying, I still don't get it. We have to read it again. Aaron was starting to get a little bit frustrated. We've spoken about the story. He loves the story. I love the story. So he was starting to get a little bit frustrated. He wanted to move on already. But we weren't understanding Pshat. It just wasn't making sense. So at a certain point, Aaron just gets frustrated, and he advances the following svara. We're trying to, I think, combine different menachos. This one's Tummy, this one's Tahor. The Tummy one was much, much more than the Tahor one. But somehow the Gemara seems to be saying that when you combine them, everything works out. So what svara did Aaron advance? You shouldn't be able to guess. What? No. What svara? Aaron advanced the following svara. There's potentially times where a miyut can be mevatel a rogue. Usually a rogue is mevatel the miyut, but it seems like in this case the miyut, the smaller one, is mevatel the rogue. Okay, we have pshat, let's move on. I'm like, Aaron, you just told me that the miyut is mevatel the rogue? He's like, yeah, that's clearly what's going on. This is what the Gemara is saying. Let's go. We got to keep moving. All right. I am not going on with the Gemara that says that a miyut is mevatel, and he gets upset and he gets angry. Tzvi, why are you being so stubborn and so annoying? This is clearly what's going on. All right. Stop. We're going to the art scroll. Now, this is not pshat. You go to the art scroll, and obviously, without any chance that he was right, I was correct. That was not pshat. It wasn't even close to pshat. It was ridiculous.
What's pshat?
I don't know. it was not that, though. It was not that a miyut can be mevatel the rogue. And that's a story that we come back to, but especially when we're talking about the value of a chavrusa, not in that extreme of a scenario, but the number one goal, number one benefit of learning with chavrusa is the opportunity to run your ideas or your understanding of the Gemara by somebody else who's not, let's say, coming in with the same preconceived notions and the same assumptions as you are, and you can bounce ideas off of each other. And you're saying that if Aaron had been learning that Gemara on his own, then he would have ran with that pshat. I don't know if you can call that finishing shots. Do you think that there's a Gemara somewhere that says that a miyut's in the bottom of the road? He probably messed up somewhere. So the fact that he had a chavrusa who was sitting there who could stop him, slow him down, that's not pshat, let's work this over again, was, I think, very, very helpful. But even if it's not that extreme, just to be able to have one guy, this understanding of Gemara, this guy, different understanding of Gemara, you talk it out, work it out, look for proofs, look for riots, look for questions on each person's ideas, that's very, very powerful, very important in actually figuring out what is this Gemara, what is this idea trying to say. Wolby talks that out. He starts a little bit earlier than that. I wanted to start with that story, though. He starts a little bit earlier. Says that there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which describes two people learning together and one person learning together. Listen to the Lashon there. This is in Gimel Beis. The Mishnah says, Shnayim Shiyoshvim V'oskim B'divrei Torah Shechina Shiruya Beinehem. So how does the Mishnah describe two people learning together? The Shechina is there. That's probably the most noticeable or noteworthy thing that jumps out of the Mishnah. The Shechina is literally sitting between them. It's like the Gemara in Kiddushin says. If you have a husband and wife who are working well together, there's Shalom B'nehem. So the Shechina, Shuryah B'nehem also. Ish, the Isha, and the Yud, and the Hey comes together. The Shechina is there. Really, really cool. So it's almost a similar dynamic with the Chavrusa, that the Chavrusa is learning well together. Shechina, Shuryah B'nehem. Beautiful. Yeah. This is Chaf Dalet. Chaf Dalet in the So Shechina Shuya, that's awesome. That sounds really cool. Listen to the second. How does the Mishnah describe one person learning? Echad ha'osik b'torah HaKadosh Baruch Hu kovea lo schar. So what's that one? You'll get your peanuts, right? You'll get your reward. Kovea lo schar, but Hashem's not listening in. Right? The Shechina is not Shiruya there. Hashem is not sitting in on your learning session listening to the Torah that you're coming up with. There's one more subtle difference. I'm going to read it again. There's one subtle difference in how the Torah itself is even presented. Shnayim Shiyoshvim V'oskim B'divrei Torah Shechina Shiruya B'nehem Echad Ha'osek B'Torah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kovea Lo Schar. What's the more nuanced? What? Very good. Shnayim Shiyoshvim V'oskim B'Divrei Torah Echad ha'oseik b'Torah. So what's that difference? Why, there's a Mishnah, right? We can be medayik from Lashon of the Mishnah. So what's the difference between divrei Torah and oskim b'Torah? Are you saying passive versus active? I mean, when it's divrei Torah, it's more creative, it's more involved, and oskim b'Torah is just like, I'm kind of reading what's there?
Yeah.
Okay. Now you can say no. You're like, this could be a chavrusa right now. You can say no. What are you thinking about? Yeah. What Torah is that?
No. Yeah.
You want to say that? Yeah, Josh?
No, I was going to say, I don't know how what kind of truth to be able to say that.
Say what?
That,
so two is more active than one.
But the based on the lashon of divrei Torah versus just oseg Torah. Oseg, like oseg, but anything mean? But anything mean like
they're both those. We have an addition of divrei as opposed to just oseg Torah. I think I heard the suggestion. You're free to disagree. Yeah, what do you think?
Divrei might be something more concrete.
Okay.
Meaning because it's oseg with divrei Torah, like divrei, like. I don't know, makes it seem a bit more concrete.
It's almost like their dvar. No, it's the words that they're putting out into the world as they're having this conversation. That's the dvarim that they're osik in, as opposed to osik b'Torah. He has the text in front of him and he's reading it. Right, the other Revolving points out he may not even be saying the words. There's the Gemara, I think, in Erevin maybe, which says that even when you're learning alone, there's tremendous value in speaking the words out and trying to create the sense of divrei Torah even when you're learning alone. It's obviously not going to be the same as when you're actually having a conversation with another person. So it could be, I think, it's a similar idea. The osik, the divrei Torah, makes it more concrete, more involved. It's the divrei, the dvarim, or the words that you're bringing to the table, as opposed to one guy kind of sitting. I've had this experience numerous times of very, very quickly when I'm trying to learn on my own, the asik b'Torah ceases to be an asik b'Torah and the head slowly goes down. That happens less. It does still happen, but it happens less when you're learning with chavrusa, just more active, more involved. Yeah, yeah.
A little side point. If you're doing Shnei
Mikra,
should you say the words out
loud? If you can, yeah, 100%. That's definitely ideal. In general, for learning, I think you should do Shnei Mikra. Depends what the point of Shnei Mikra might be. Is it preparing for laning, preparing for getting that sense? Presumably, you'd want to have laning. Good.
Isn't there a whole guess whether or not Torah even counts if you're saying out loud or not saying out loud?
Does it count?
Like for
Skull. Oh, for Birch Torah type of thing? Like or, if you're only thinking Divrei Torah?
If it counts as like Dima Torah,
then
it's in your head.
So I assume that's part of that discussion. I think there's a question, do you need to make Birch Torah before thinking Torah? And Jim, which I guess reading without speaking it out would be considered thinking Torah. So yeah, that would be an interesting question. I assume the same question. Okay, so that's the importance of having a chavrusa, learning with chavrusa, chaim him lemotzeim. There's a gemara that says, quotes a pasuk, cherev el habadim v'no alu. What does that mean? The sword on their necks and they fall apart, I think, v'no alu. The gemara's drush on that is, cherev al tzavareim shel sonem shel tamid chachamim shiyoshvim Badan, I think, Voskim B'Torah. There's a sword on the necks of the Tamid HaChacham who are sitting alone and learning. They're not supposed to be doing that. There's a sense of lacking this chevra and building each other up. There's also the very practical point of their Torah is not going to be as well developed if they're learning alone as opposed to with other people. So those are the advantages, those are the benefits of learning the chavrusa. There's also some... Oh, there are definitely challenges in learning chavrusa, which we'll talk about in a second. Probably the most famous chavrusa story is Rabbi Yochanan Meir Shlakish. You guys know the background of Rabbi Yochanan Meir Shlakish? No.
Meir Shlakish was a bandit.
Steinsaltz said he was a gladiator, I think. Meir Shlakish had an interesting past. I think there's a Tosfos that says that he actually started out as a Talmud Chacham. And then I don't know if this is called going off the derech, I don't know what happened to him, but he stopped being a Talmud Chacham as his profession, as his day job, and became either a gladiator or a bandit. And then he encountered Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan was swimming in the river, and Rabbi Yochanan was so beautiful that Meir Shlakish thought he was a woman and jumped over the river and tried to get him. Turned out he was a man, he was surprised. Rabbi Yochanan was so impressed by Meir Shlakish's strength, he said, Chel Tholo Raisa, you should turn your strength to Torah. Meir Shlakish said, why would I do that? And Rabbi Yochanan says, I'll give you my sister, I think. I'll give you my sister as a wife. good deal. Where do I sign? He was interested. He went for it. He took the sister, and then he tried to jump back over the river, maybe the Arden. He wasn't able to because his strength had already been put under the old Shel Torah. Okay, what does that mean? Interesting story. So then they're learning together for a bunch of years, and eventually they get to a discussion of Tumah, of the Tumah status of different weapons. Right, at what point does a certain weapon become Tumah? So the Tumah in general depends on the Gemar Malacha of a Kli. When this Kli is ready for use, and when the person making it is ready to start using it, that's when it's able to become Tumah. Having this debate, having this discussion, finally, Rabbi Yochanan, it seems like maybe he was the Aron in the Chavrusa of the partnership, he got frustrated at Rish Lakish and said, you know what, you have the background of a bandit, you know better than I do about like these weapons, these tools, because this is what you worked with for so long. Rabbi Yochanan was a little insulted. They had a discussion, they had a back and forth, a little bit sharp. Rabbi Yochanan ended up insulted, and he actually, I guess, cursed Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish fell ill. Rish Lakish ended up dying. So this was very upsetting for Rabbi Yochanan, because there was nobody in the Beis Medrash who was as sharp as, or as strong as Rish Lakish as a learner. Who is he going to learn with? He needed a chavrusa. So the Beis Medrash got... Well, he also needed a chavrusa. In addition to the feelings he had for Rish Lakish passing away, he also needed a chavrusa. So Beis Medrash gets together and they elect Rabbi Lazar ben Pedas, I think. Yeah, they elect Rabbi Lazar ben Pedas. He's the up and coming star. He's the one who's going to learn with Rabbi Yochanan. So they sit down for the first session. Rabbi Yochanan, they open up the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan says a svara. Rabbi Lazar ben Pedas says, fantastic idea. Here's a raya. Here's another raya. Three rayas. Four. I have five, six, seven rayas for you. Rabbi Yochanan says, okay, like whatever. Let's keep going. Another Svara, another Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan says, I think this is Pshat. Rabbi Lazar ben Pedas says, fantastic idea. Here's like five, six, seven rayas for you. And Rabbi Yochanan says, what are you doing? Rabbi Lazar ben Pedas says, what's the problem? We're learning together. I gave you a bunch of rayas for your idea. Rabbi Yochanan says, no. When I learned with Reish Lakish, every Svara I'd say, he'd ask me 24 kashas. He'd try to shlug me up, but this Gemara says this, this Gemara says that, this Gemara says this, and I would have to respond to his 24 kashas. And through that back and forth, me answering, that's how we'd hash out the sugya, that's how we'd actually get clarity. I don't need you telling me rayos for my idea, I know my idea is right. Your job is to tell me where I'm wrong. Rabbi Lazar ben Pedas wasn't his... I don't know what happened. I guess that wasn't Rabbi Lazar ben Pedas' skill. Rabbi Yochanan ends up, if I remember correctly, Rabbi Yochanan ends up dying. He goes crazy. He ends up dying from a lack of chavrusa. Oh, chavrusa, as they say, the Marantinus. Oh, chavrusa. Oh, misusa. Pretty rough. So what are the challenges to overcome when it comes to chavrusa? So Ravoli gives us two. I like to call them the high school issue and the yeshiva issue. What's the high school issue when it comes to chavrusa? I think we've all experienced this. Chavrusa session in high school is basically an opportunity to catch up, see how your friends are doing, talk about whatever latest game was, latest TV show. You're talking about everything except for the Daf Gemara that's in front of you. So that's the challenge number one. Second, the more yeshiva challenge, and it could be it hasn't even come up yet. There it is. We spoke about this last year. Competitiveness. This is something that I felt very, very strongly when I was in yeshiva. Probably still do. But the competitive sense, you're sitting together with a guy who's supposed to be your equal. Is he your equal? You better? Is he better? Well, let's find out. Who offers the better svara? If my svara is right, then clearly I'm the better chavrusa. If his svara is right, then clearly he's the better chavrusa. What that becomes is, instead of trying to be mevayer or sugya, trying to figure out what's really going on here, it becomes, what can I come up with to be matzdik my perspective? I don't care if it's right or not. I could have known half an hour ago that this was totally wrong, this is not correct, but I'm going to keep fighting for it because I don't want him to know that I know that he's right. That's the yeshiva, that's the challenge of competitiveness. It's broader than just chavrusa, right? The guy sitting next to you, even if you're not learning to him, there is a sense of, I want to be the one who's leaving the basement just later, not the one who's leaving earlier. That's a general yeshiva challenge. But specifically in chavrusa, when you're matched face-to-face, and especially if over and over again, why is it that his svar is always right, and I'm the one who's always struggling to come up with something, and I'm barely understanding him? There are definitely feelings like that which are brought into play. So both of those issues, the batala issue and the jealousy issue, Revolvi suggests that the best way to deal with them is to recognize them. That to have it almost out in the open to say that this is challenge number one, this is challenge number two, these are challenges that we need to face as a chavrusa, and if you need to talk about them explicitly, you should actually be open to talking about them explicitly. But even just recognizing, expecting them, and knowing that these are things which are going to crop up, is already half the battle, is already getting you towards coming up with a solution. there is, I guess, an aspect of working on valuing MS, that's a feeling or a value that you can cultivate for yourself. And it's hard, it's difficult, but being able to say, you know what, I think you're right and I'm wrong, to practice that, to work on that, smaller stakes and then kind of build up. That's definitely going to help a lot. And another one, yeah, you should be able to recognize for yourself, even if you don't say it, you should be able to recognize for yourself, to have the self-awareness of when are you fighting for MS and when are you fighting for whatever the other one is, reputation, feeling good, not because you don't want to admit. Just be able to recognize what is really going on here. Is this an MS fight or is this me being stubborn and not wanting to give in fight? Having that awareness is the first step towards breaking that or solving that problem.
And ideally, I thought about that maybe without combating it. If you also spend time focusing on like what the purpose of learning is.
100%.
And then, all right, because meaning the purpose isn't, which is up with that same idea as MS, but like even in general, like when you see like someone else like standing later or doing better things and you like almost wish like I was doing that, if you think about what the purpose is to do that, and then you recognize that like you guys have the same purpose for doing it, and then like let's say it's like bringing light to this world or whatever, like so like an idea like that. Meaning, if it's not just about individual growth, and then you realize you're all the same team.
And then you're saying what? So therefore, that's going to be motivation to not do it because I thought about
not it. Not a motivation to not do it, but you will be upset. You'll be happy that more of your goal, which is his goal also, is being accomplished.
And if it's almost like a universalistic goal, bringing more orb, bring more light and more illumination, light. Understanding into the world.
Yeah.
So he's doing a great job, and that's not against me. That's helping me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice of you. And then the more you tap into that awareness, the more you kind of focus on that awareness, the easier it will be for you to let that go without having it bother you. Nice. Okay, so a couple of the challenges of a chavrusa, batala, jealousy. Number one, just to recognize that they exist. This is very, very helpful. And to know for yourself, is this a stubbornness fight or is this an MS fight? Having that awareness is very, very helpful. In terms of finding a good match, he talks a little bit about this in the article, in the piece here. His number one idea is that pace is the number one factor to keep in mind. The slow guy should not learn with the fast guy. Everything else is basically fine. He adds in at the very, very end, almost in parentheses, if you see on Chafei. He adds in like one piece in parentheses, as long as they're learning within the same shita. As long as they're taking the same style, the same approach, basically a brisker should not learn with a marshanik. That's even if they have the same pace, that's not going to go well. Rabbenar, she's very much on the brisker. It was one the Ram. Now I think it's Sagan Rosh Kola in Gross. So yeah, I went by him for a couple of years when I was in Gross, and he said the year before I came, whatever Masechta they were doing, there was one chavrusa pair, two guys who decided that instead of doing like a normal set of makoros, they're just going to do every single marsha in the back of the Gemara, and that was going to be their even saver. Like, okay, fine, I don't know why you want to do that, nice idea. But they also decided that they would go to Rabbenarsh with all of their questions. Now Rabbenarsh Ashir is not at all in every single marsha. Marsha makes like these small diugamantoskos, like this word instead of that word, and when he has this question instead of that question, they're very difficult, and it's a very different style than like a classical brisker lumbus type of shir, which is what Rabbenarsh gives. So Rabbenarsh basically, like Rabbenarsh's line was, I was basically giving to shirim that year. I was giving like a regular shir to everybody in the brisker lumbus, and I also had to like prepare for these two guys who were doing every single marsha and trying to figure out the marsha's point on Tosfos, that they were coming to me with their questions. So I had to be able to give them shir also. So those two styles often do not work together at all. The so brisker and the marshanik should not be learning. But otherwise, it's an approach. It's what you choose to focus on. Meaning, if you're choosing to go through every single tosos and then go through every marsha on those tosos, and then you're going to be spending your time in a very different way than somebody who's in a standard brisker type of shir or a classical analytical type of shir. So that chavrusa pair is probably not going to go so well. Aside from that, so as long as you keep the speed in mind, that's good. I wrote an article. I have a website that I don't talk about so much. It's called beforeyouryear.com, which is like a bunch of stuff about yeshiva. One of the things I have up there is 10 qualities to look for in a chavrusa. I'll drop a link in the group. I'll say it that way. So the 10 qualities to look for in a chavrusa that I think we got besides for speed. But aside from that, there definitely is positives. There are benefits to not having somebody who's like the same exact background as you, same size, same approach as you, within the same Shitata Limud, as long as you're both kind of working with the same tools, you're both in a, let's say, in an analytical type of shiur, so then you can have one approach, he has a different approach, you have one side, you like to ask this type of question, he likes to ask this type of question, that's fine, that's good. That's the type of thing which is going to bring out those tensions, which lead to better understanding of the sugya. That's one, I think, benefit that people often don't think about. It's also, you have to keep in mind, do I want to daf learn with a friend or somebody who I'm not as friendly with? Right? That if you're learning with a friend, it just heightens the challenge of the batala issue. There can often be benefits to choosing to learn daf with somebody that you're not as close with. Number one, that does, chavrusas can often lead to very, very strong relationships, but also just in terms of how you're learning, to be able to say that, well, since we're not such close friends, we'll much more likely spend more time learning together as opposed to schmoozing together. Yeah.
I think the upside of learning with a friend is a lot greater, but also...
What's the upside? You're just more comfortable in...
A relationship that's like a beautiful relationship. That's based on Torah also.
That's going to happen with the new guy also. It's just without the baggage of we have to fight past Batal every day.
You might not have a relationship
with him. No, it might not happen. That's true. I've definitely. I've had both.
I've learned with people who I was friend with and I quite knew I wasn't going to be so friend with.
And you ended up not being
friend
with still.
And I was so friend with him. We had a good talk with yourself and also learned from one of my best friends. And it's like very good.
And has it changed the nature of the relationship also?
Yeah.
Very nice. Okay, beautiful. That's a very significant upside. Yeah.
I was thinking that you're not going to have the opportunity to learn much less than I've ever learned a good friend for the rest of our lives. But you can keep a charusa. So it's kind of like your path to learning with friends for the rest of your life. But also, but not to the extent of the morning seder, mm-hmm. but you want to keep, but it's good to have you have that friend rest of your life, and your foundation of your friendship was also the centerpiece was also the morning seder, yeshiva, the night seder, whatever.
Jacob Thomas, learning with a friend is an opportunity to transform what would have been just like a stock relationship into a relationship which is found.
So, yeah, it's like a spiritual and more connected.
That's a very nice point. That's definitely an important upside to think about. So let's say it this way, just to recognize that there's a challenge and also a benefit of learning with friends. There are also challenges and benefits of learning with people that you're not necessarily as close to. You have to weigh the pluses and minuses. So that's the chavrusa situation. When it comes to chazara, the chazara, just to know, is difficult. It's hard. I'm sure we've all experienced that. He starts off, or Volbi starts off, with a really interesting medrash. Medrash from Mishle, I think medrash... He says that Hashem Mashiach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to gather everybody in the Emek Yehoshaphat. Where is Emek Yehoshaphat? I don't know. We'll skip the Gabe Ben Hinnom story. But there's an Emek Yehoshaphat somewhere. Everyone's going to gather into this Emek Yehoshaphat. Everyone's going to stand in line. And they're going to be judged by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the Yom HaDin, which is the big Yom HaDin, which is coming up. When a Talmid Chacham's turn comes to be judged, Hashem is going to stop him and say, you learn Torah? The guy's going to say, yeah. I think he actually goes in order. You learn Mikra? The guy's going to say, yes. No, it's just Klima Sakta. The guy, did you learn Torah? Sakta B'Torah? Tom Chum was going to say, yeah, I learned the Shtickle. I learned a little bit. What's Hashem going to say? Okay, Zog Shir, everybody listen up. This Talmud Chacham is going to give us a shir. And this guy, this Talmud Chacham, who just told HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he was Osek B'Torah B'Chayav, he's going to have to give shir to everybody in, I don't know, Tashem, to everybody in Emek Yehoshaphat. If you think of like the pressure being on, you know, some guys speak in shul sometimes, they give the shir between Mincha and Maariv. The pressure giving shir to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I think, eclipses any sort of potential feelings of nervousness, of embarrassment you might feel getting up in front of your shul. Just imagine trying to give shir to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you don't have time to prepare, right? It's not like, okay, come back in a month and go through all your notes and give shir then. No. Right now, you told me a sakta b'Torah. Tell me what you learned. Give us a shir. If you didn't chazer, if you don't have things ready to go, if you don't have your notebook of ideas, how are you giving that shir? It's going to be pretty tough. It's going to be pretty tough, right? It's going to be kind of hard. So that's his opener. That's his motivation. If you keep this in mind, it's going to be a great motivation to actually get the chazara done. That's definitely a little extreme. There are other ways to motivate chazara also, but just to have that in mind. The Asher Yishabalakan Tamudo Biyado, right? That when you get to the Olam Emes, you get to Olam Haba, you need to have your learning. It's a similar idea. You need to have your learning ready to go, organized with that opportunity to. Be actually able to speak out the things that you learn. It's a real challenge, and you can notice how much of a challenge it is if you just ask yourself after, let's say, an afternoon sitter, or ask yourself after a morning sitter, what did I do today? It's often very hard to answer, right? Let's say after a morning sitter, you walk out of shear. So what are my 3 points, the zipper style? What are my 3 points that I'm walking away with? If you're not consciously thinking of what are those points going to be, it can often be very hard to actually have something to say. And then you just put a bunch of those days together, and you come back at the end of the week. What did I learn over the course of the week? I have no idea. I don't remember where I started. I don't remember what we did, what topic we've done, what mistakes are we doing? If you're not focused on retention, if you're not focused on thinking, what am I going to walk away with, it can be very, very hard to do. So there are definitely a few strategies, a few things that you can, let's say, build into your day to work on this. The most obvious one is just like to read the Gemara again. That actually is not the most helpful thing to do. It's important, especially when you're learning to read. The more you read the Gemara, the better your reading skills will become. But in terms of remembering, the way memory works is you need to create connections between different things. You need to challenge yourself. Right, those two things. The same way for you want to work out your muscles. You need to challenge your muscles. If you just do like a 5-pound lift a bunch of times a day, you're not going to be challenging your muscles. Your muscles will not grow. It's the same thing with your brain. If you just kind of run over something or you read something inside, it's not challenging your brain. It's not actually giving you that much of a boost in terms of what you're going to remember. One thing which is very, very helpful, I think Rav Schefter recommends this, something that I picked up from my nights with Rav Schefter, in Shana Aleph, is doing chazara outside. That if you, once you've gone over a piece, close the Gemara, and you try to talk out the Shaka Vatari right after you've done it, doing it the next day, doing it the day after that, the more you can talk out without those prompts of like seeing the words on the page, the more you can talk out the Shaka Vatari, you can talk Shaka Vatari, talk out the ideas from the outside with the Gemara closed, it forces you to work that much harder. It makes you have those connections, what came before, what's coming up now, what's coming up next. And the more you can build up those connections, the more you can force yourself to do that, the better your retention is going to be. That's something that we've done for the past few years in afternoon table, and we've seen that it's been very, very helpful. I was talking to one of the guys from 2 or 3 years ago. We started with Lulav HaGuzzel and Sukkah. So I guess it was 3 years ago? We started with 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. 2 years ago? You guys did Lulav HaGuzzel? Was that around then? This is my 3rd year back. We definitely did Sukkah. Yeah, we definitely did Lulav HaGuzzel. Because they went back and forth. Maybe they went, no, it's
the last 4 years ago then. Because 2 years ago was Rosh Hashanah.
2 years ago was
Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, Beth Shana, Aleph was Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah. So it must have been the year before that. Yeah, no Hymans, Shana, Aleph, that 3. So then I was just talking to one of those guys, and one of the things which came up was that beginning of the 3rd character, which we had done so many times over the course of Elul, and he still remembered. Maybe he remembered the Mishnah and the first like 2 or 3 sukkahs in the Gemara. That's incredibly powerful, right? And that was 3 years ago. That's a long time. I don't know if he's seen sukkah since then. If you do this type of thing over and over and over again from the outside, give yourself time, do it again, then it's very, very long lasting. And I think Rav Schefter recommends doing the Chazara, a little bit more of the focus on the Chazara outside, as opposed to just reading inside. Reading inside is helpful for the words to get the reading down, but not as helpful for the actual ideas. And at the end of the day, what you're looking to remember is the ideas. Is the ideas less the actual memorizing the words on the page. Those are practical points. There's also the point that we almost started with, right? The Hefer Chalimah HaTorah. If you really feel like that idea is true, and if not for the Torah, those types of things, then you could argue that it's the act of learning which is keeping you alive. I think it's a lot more likely that it's the content, it's the ideas, it's what we're gaining from the Torah that we're learning, which is giving us that appreciation, that understanding, that chios when it comes to learning. So if that's true, then how can we kind of just let it go in one ear and not the other without even making the effort to remember any of it? It doesn't seem to fit with our stated goal of building up those ideas. We need to be able to actually remember. There's another mission in Pirkei Avos that says that anybody who forgets davar echad mimishnaso, somebody who forgets one thing that he learns, do you remember? We've all seen Pirkei Avos. I don't know about that. What's his mission in Pirkei Avos saying? Anybody know?
I thought it was one chiddush.
What?
I thought if you have chiddush on Torah and you forget it, then...
Yeah, very good, very good. If you forget one thing that you learned, it's like the Chayav Misa, which is very, very harif. And then it gives it a little bit of it qualifies it a little bit. If it's mitoch ones, then fine, we're willing to let it go. If it's just because you were selection is. If you just actively removed it from your heart, that's what we're talking about. That's problematic. But if it was mitoch ones because you're just learning too much, then fine. Then we're not going to be in the chayiv view. We're not going to be in the chayiv view of an avshel. So what does it mean that you were yoshev meser milivo as opposed to mitoch ones? What does it mean that you actively uprooted it from your heart? So one of the mafarshim on the Mishnah says if you don't chazer, you're almost actively declaring I don't care about this material, and therefore I'm comfortable, I'm willing to not chazer it, and I'll just let it flow away. So he actually identifies not chazering with this idea of actively or causing yourself to forget learning. So it's pretty harif, it's pretty important. That is a big deal. One last point, just in terms of why it's so important to chazer. Our goals, especially in yeshiva, is not just to pick up skills in learning. It's not just to learn how to read. It's not just to learn how to read a Rishon, read a Gemara, and where do I go to for psak in this area of halacha. It's not basic skills. It's building ourselves up into, hopefully, in whatever form this is going to take, but building ourselves up into gedol. We probably haven't mentioned the whole Rabbi Akiva story. Maybe you guys remember from last year. We'll save it for next time. There's an idea that every single person who comes to yeshiva has the opportunity to grow into something significant in learning. The only way that can actually happen is if you're building up a base of content, of knowledge, of ideas, which grows over time. If the only thing that you have in your, let's say, in your backpack, the only thing that you know in terms of your EDS that's over is what you're working on this year, you're never going to be able to amount to anything significant. You'll only have one Masechta at a time. If you can put in the time for Chazara, at least to know the basics, Gemara Rashi Tosfos, Gemara Rashi, say it that way. If you can just know the basics of the content, you can know the Gemara Rashi that you've done over the past few years, then you walk out of yeshiva after 2 years, you walk out of YU, any college, you walk out after having a solid morning seder, your afternoon seder, for let's say 4, 5, 6 years, that's 4, 5, 6 Masechtas that you can have in your pocket. Things will start coming together once you know that much. You need to put in the time, you need to put in the effort to actually remember those things. Right, you guys, we did Yuma and then in Elul. So the next time something comes up, and like Pikuach Nefesh, we were doing last back in afternoon today. So the next time something comes up with like a Pikuach Nefesh orientation, you got to be able to remember, oh, we spoke about this, 8th Perek of Yuma, what's the Svara, Rashi, and the Rambam, and spoke about that a lot. Those types of things, that only works if you build up this base of acquired content. It's part of you growing yourself, developing yourself into a Gadol B'Torah, which really, hopefully, is the goal for that we can all be working towards. In terms of practical, how do you do chazara? What are some practical hints, tips? So we already said one, chazara outside as opposed to inside. Inside is important. It's also good to read inside, but to spend a little bit of time on the outside, doing it with somebody else is also very, very powerful. You can have somebody to talk it out with, not just, it's good for you to do on your own. You're walking somewhere, people say about zipper, you can chazar an entire masechta, a 20-minute walk. But if you have this style also, if you have a chavrusa that you've learned with or somebody else who's holding whatever you're learning, to be able to talk out these ideas, what's the Mishnah say, what's the first question in the Gemara, what's the response, what's the Raya, to have that as a conversation is also very, very helpful. Just practically keeps you going more, you remember it better when you're talking it out. Like we said earlier, the value of talking it out, so that's good. You should make sure you're learning it well the first couple of times, so that it's clear enough to say it out, to say it over, even after that first few times. The Masorah that I got from my Chavrusa is, you know, the four lines at the top of every single Daf Gemara on the Rashis. Rashi and Tosos usually have four lines that are meeting in the middle. You know what I'm talking about? Gemara's here, Rashi here, four lines, Tosos here, about four lines, and they go to the sides of the page. So there's a small space between those four lines. So each time you read through the Gemara one time, you put a dot by the first space, second time dot by the second space, third time dot by the third, fourth time dot by the fourth. I don't know why that's so satisfying, but it is tremendously satisfying to see those spaces filling up, just to give yourself a visual record of how often you've gone over inside. And at a certain point, you should be able to start transitioning to being able to say it outside as well. Rebbe very, very strongly says, do not run for the exciting Rishonim, the exciting Achronim, to see the raid before you've actually gotten the Gemara, Rashi, and let's say a Rishon down. This is Tosfos, Rebbe Nemtzel recommends, I'd ask Rebbe Nemtzel and ask Yeshiva, if I was only going to do one Rishon during afternoon sitting in addition to Rashi, what should I do? He recommended the Rush. So let's say Gemara, Rashi. Rush, you're going to be doing whatever it is you're going to be doing. Well, rush to the Rush. Why the Rush? Because what you're usually getting from the Rush is a practical, it's not a bottom line, it's not the bottom line of Pesach Halacha, but he's usually either summarizing a piece, summarizing a sugya, and giving you a bottom line from it, or he's bringing in other information that's not on the page, but still very important to know, as opposed to Tosos. Tosos is telling you sometimes, that like, well, there's this Mar Neirvim, which says it this way, and here's a Dafik answer, which is no Kipta, which you wouldn't have thought of and doesn't really add so much to your understanding of the sugya. So in terms of prioritizing time, it's more valuable, again, he's not me, he's Rebbe himself, it's more valuable to walk out with the rush and to leave the Tosos for a different time. You know, when I was with Shana Aleph, one of the Rambam suggested that we were doing Kiddushin that year, so one of the Rambam suggested that I finish all of Kiddushin with Tosos. I'm like, oh, great idea. But that was before I asked Rebbe himself. I should have asked Rebbe himself first. So I worked on that goal. Looking back at that year, I strongly feel like I could have used my time better. Yeah, but I feel like I could have used that time. Yeah, but I feel like I could have used the time for other things. But let's say I'd done that rush and I had chazer, whatever it was, I think that would have been a more valuable use of that time. What? This is Shana. With Chavrusa. Aaron White was Chavrusa, like the Shana Gimel guy was Chavrusa. That is a little bit of a different Mitzvah there. So that was that one. Yeah, and if you really want to get into the Chazar, I'm sure you've all heard the song, the Bahar Rebbe song. So it's not just the song; it's also a style of learning. It's also an approach to Dafka to Chazara. And the whole idea there is that there's this incredible Geschmackkeit, which is generated from continuous or Chazar in the same Dafka Mar over and over and over again until you know cold. I think their line is you know it in the bones. If you've gone over it enough times, if you're interested in that type of thing, you go over a thing that you work on 2 daf a day over and over and over and over again until you really, really know a cold. That could be an interesting shita or an approach to check out if you're interested. Okay, so that's Chazara and Chavrusa. Chavrusas are important. Divrei Torah, Shechina Shruya, as opposed to Osek B'Torah and Kovei Aloschar, but not the Divrei Torah, not the Shechina Shruya. Hashem's not listening in. He's there. He's found there.
There.
Yeah, I don't know what the best word for Shari. He's
present.
What?
Present.
Present. Present is probably good. The Shekhinah is present between you.
Based on the words you said.
Yeah, the present is probably good. The challenges of learning with Chavrusa, the benefits of learning with Chavrusa, miyut is never mevatel a robe. If you walk out with one thing from this year, miyut's never mevatel a robe. If you ever meet Aaron White, you can tell him that. Miyut's never mevatel a robe. He'll understand for sure, and I hope he'll laugh. And when it comes to Chazara, the benefits of Chazara, why should we Chazar? Building a base is becoming adult in learning, and some tips and tricks.
Should there be a desire
for what? Let's just say yes, and we can talk about it. We can talk about it every time.